The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Boker Tov, Anthony. Moed L'Simcha, how are you?
Boker Tov, Moedim L'Simcha. Why do we say Moedim L'Simcha? Do we know, Kathy? Do the listeners know what the significance of Moed Tov or Moedim L'Simcha is?
You can explain that it really is a time of joy.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll leave it as a little bit of a teaser for now, and we'll talk about it at the end. You can think about it in the meantime.
All right.
I'd like to welcome you to my sukkah.
Thank you.
The only visitors that will be in my sukkah this year.
And so it should be. So, Anthony, what are Israelis legally allowed to do during Sukkot? During this hard lockdown?
It depends who you ask, I suppose, right?
Okay, the general population. Let's go with the majority.
Look, we're in a lockdown at the moment. And according to the law, we're allowed to go within 1 kilometer distance of your home, unless you're undertaking an essential service or an essential task. And we have a cat fight just outside the sukkah. So the essential services include going to supermarkets, going to pharmacies, stocking up with essential goods that you might need. Essential services are according to the rules that have been laid down by the government. Certain jobs have been designated as essential services, and you're entitled to go to your office in order to undertake an essential service, or to your place of work to undertake an essential service, providing the rules of social distancing are maintained. That's what Israelis are officially allowed to do. There is also a special dispensation that's been given for people who wish to pray together. You're entitled to go to a prayer service within 1 kilometer of your home, but it has to be an outdoor service. No indoor services at all. All prayer services at the moment, all shul services, are being undertaken outdoors. So that's the kind of, the rules that exist at the moment. You're entitled to go out to exercise outdoors as long as it's within 1 kilometer of your house. And as long as you're only doing it alongside other people who live in your household, you can't meet up with neighbors in order to do exercising together and things like that. And the rule is that if you visit somebody else's sukkah, you get a fine of 500 shekels. That's according to the official rules. So those are the conditions that we're living under during Sukkot at the moment, which of course makes Sukkot a very, very different time than what is usual for Israel, because Sukkot is a very, very much an outdoors time when the weather is pretty good, when people have holidays, school holidays, people like to go out to be outdoors, on the mountains and at the lakes and walking along the rivers, and visiting the parks and the beaches. But not this year. According to the rules, none of that is allowed. And in fact, I saw a piece on TV last night which showed the north of Israel and how deserted it is, with of course people not being allowed to travel and to visit the usual beauty spots that people usually enjoy traveling to over this time of year.
Very interesting, because I mean, when you consider that we aren't allowed to entertain, you know, it makes no sense to be entertaining, especially in this world of COVID-19. We really are forced to focus on the whole essence of what Sukkot is about, and that is about God's embrace. It's not about hiking, and it's about awareness of God's embrace, Anthony.
Well, that's true. The thing is that our religion is so focused on sharing all of the different significant issues, significances which come out of the various holidays. We're very focused on sharing it with people. It boils down to the most basic thing of a minyan. You're not unable to pray or do the full set of prayers without being in the presence of 10 men, according to the way that the minyanim are structured. So, the religion is very much focused on sharing, on getting together for the chagim, for the celebrations, for sharing our holidays together. That's really not only how it's been structured, but it's also how we as social animals have become accustomed to doing things. And the moment we have to do a Pesach Seder with only our nuclear family, it becomes a crisis situation, because that's just not how Pesach should be. That's not how Rosh Hashanah should be.
Not how we used to be.
At the table.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But Anthony, I mean, on the press story, okay, so minyan is not derisa, it's not halacha. It's not halacha that a man has to, you know what I mean? This is a tradition. You don't even have to use the prayers in the prayer book, right? You pray to God in your own words. So maybe this is all forcing us to get back to that. You know, I think about these things. And I could be completely wrong.
We follow the laws of Rabbanan as well.
Yes.
And so, you know, the whole issue of the rabbinic pronouncements over the years, the Rabbanan, have a certain significance, which we shouldn't forget.
No, there's a weight, for sure.
You know, the things might not be Doraita, and come straight from the written text, but of course, there are massive numbers of interpretations that we've all accepted as part of the everyday structure that we do things. And for example, just a little thing to recall is those people who, for example, wish to say Kaddish for a departed loved one are precluded effectively from doing so unless they're in the presence of a minyan.
Sure.
That's the way that things have been, and that's the way that we understand things. Now, is Kaddish absolutely required according to halacha? No, of course it's not. But we've become so accustomed to these ways of running our lives that when it gets taken away from you, even though it might not necessarily be something that's Doraita, it becomes a certain, it leaves a void.
Sure. And maybe the freedom to move away from those traditions that hold us is the whole point. I mean, I'm just putting it out there.
I think that's a very valid point, because we've been forced to reconsider so many things. I mean, for example, notice that the prayers of Yom Kippur were significantly reduced in order to prevent people from being around within social gatherings for too long. Now, who would think that in previous years anybody would even consider removing some of the fundamental prayers that go into the Yom Kippur service, and yet it's all of a sudden been quite accepted.
It's all
and
okay.
Even questioned it.
Right. It's like that year when, you know, I once walked into a supermarket before Pesach, and there were two women fighting over a bottle of milk that had, it was the last bottle of milk that had the Heksher, that it was Pesedik. The following year, well, I think it was a few years ago, there was a problem with milk, and you could use any milk.
Right. All of a sudden, the rules changed.
The rules changed. Exactly. So, you know, I think that we do need to continue to grow and, you know, have our goal as relationship with God, and if all other decisions must align to that. Anyhow, Anthony, let's get on to more serious news. Israeli police have been involved in clashes with both the ultra-Orthodox and anti-Netanyahu protesters over the past few days. What were these protests about?
Well, the anti-Netanyahu protest movement has traditionally been out and about on a Saturday evening showing their displeasure of the current government and the current prime minister, not only about the way in which he's been treating the coronavirus issue, because the last few months have really not been very successful in Israel as to the way that things have been treated, but also protesting against his ongoing court cases, which he's going to have to face later in the year, all things being equal, for corruption and for fraud charges, which are sticking to him at the moment. So there's been a massive protest movement each Saturday evening. Of course, the government has now tried to clamp down on those protests by forbidding protests to people who are not within 1 kilometer of their home. So differently stated, you are allowed to protest as long as you only do so within 1 kilometer of your home, according to the current lockdown rules, and so long as you preserve social distancing rules. Those are the current protest rules. So that means that those thousands of people who traditionally gathered outside the Prime Minister's residence in Jerusalem on a Saturday evening were now precluded from doing so if they didn't live within 1 kilometer of the residence. So what we saw on Saturday evening was many thousands of small protest groups all over the country, everybody gathering together within 1 kilometer of their homes, massive groups gathering in Tel Aviv, most of them trying to preserve social distancing, at least at the outset, until things became a little bit crazy, clashes with police, lots of accusations backwards and forwards as to who exactly started the onslaught, whether the police tried to target a few of the protesters specifically, whether the protesters suddenly broke ranks and began some physical action against the police, some violent action against the police. It's not quite sure, but there were certainly violent clashes. People were fined. People were arrested. It really didn't turn out to be very good. Lots and lots of conspiracy theories and lots of accusations that the police had been primed by the government to single out particular protesters and to be very, very violent, take physical action against them, to arrest them and to prevent them from carrying out these protests. It's not a pretty sight at the moment, but it seems as if the protest movement is really intent upon continuing, even though people might be limited as to how they express their protest by having to do so within 1 kilometer of the house. And interestingly, a whole lot of people are reported to have rented properties within 1 kilometer of the Prime Minister's home in Jerusalem in order to allow them to go from their new rented property to protest outside his home.
That sounds very expensive. That sounds very, very expensive. Who's funding these protests, Anthony? Do we know?
It's a good question, which I don't have an answer to, unfortunately. But at least there is some, you know, there's some anecdotal stories about people doing that. Unfortunately, the ultra-Orthodox community have not been adhering to social distancing as a general rule. And unfortunately, we have the situation where Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky has now been diagnosed with coronavirus. He is, of course, the senior Haredi authority, 92 years old. He's considered to be the leader of the Lithuanian Haredi movement. And he now has been, he has been diagnosed, amongst others, with the coronavirus. There have been many, many videos posted of police going into yeshivot and to shuls and to other ultra-Orthodox institutions, finding hundreds of people gathered together against social distancing rules, where they're not allowed to pray indoors, none of them with masks, the police trying to be very, very calm and quiet and asking them to disperse. But effectively, this is creating a lot of tension between the police and the ultra-Orthodox community.
It's crazy, because when one considers, I mean, if you know Judaism well, and if you know your Torah well, you'll know that there are certain things there are certain causes of death which are considered unnatural, and plague is one of them. God doesn't protect you from plague, and it's considered an unnatural death. Like, you got to wake up. It's not, you know, you got to look left and right before you cross the road, Anthony.
So everybody seems to be interpreting their belief system in a slightly different way.
Interesting,
but unfortunately. The ultra-Orthodox community as a group, there are some who have really come out and encouraged social distancing and adherence to the rules. But unfortunately, there are some who just are not doing that. And it's very, very concerning indeed, because unfortunately, the infection levels within the ultra-Orthodox community continue to be extremely high. Whereas over the last few days, we sense that infection levels outside of the ultra-Orthodox community seem to have plateaued, both within the Arab community, which had a very high infection level, and both within the secular community, where numbers were rising. But now, over the last few days, we see some evidence that things are flattening out a little bit.
Anthony, does the Haredi community have access to the information? Because we know that it's a community that doesn't engage in media.
Well, there have been accusations that the leadership of the community, that they haven't taken this and dispersed the information, because not only do they not have access to the media, but even when they do get information, they don't believe anything that they are told unless it comes from their own leadership. And so the leadership stand accused now of not sending the correct messages, because in fact, in many cases, they're sending exactly contradictory messages, saying, don't believe what the government is saying. Don't adhere to what the police are saying. You're going to do what we do. Come to shul. Get together. Let's celebrate Sukkot as we usually do. So we're getting contradictory messages. I think they now do know about Corona, and I think they do know about the way that people should behave under the circumstances. The problem is that the leadership is not echoing that, is not reinforcing that, and as such, they're not adhering to the rules.
And that is where we have to leave it today. Anthony Reich, I look forward to speaking to you tomorrow. You got me for the whole week.
I look forward to it, and we're not going to forget about Moadim L'Simcha. We will talk about why we say it tomorrow.
Please God. Thank you so much, Anthony. Have a wonderful day. God bless. Bye-bye. That's Anthony Reich. He's our Israel correspondent.